Hello and welcome to the Cultural Frontline on the BBC World Service. This week we'll meet artists, musicians and writers and hear stories of how their creativity is influenced by the environment and society they're in. What's it like being a writer in a region that feels like it's constantly reaching political boiling points?
This last year has forced me to reconsider the relationship between speed, catastrophe and writing.
We'll find out what the cancellation of a major Russian art prize can tell us about artistic freedoms in the country.
Art remains one of the few, if not the only, area of public life where political protest is tolerated.
And the Beninese singer Angélique Kidjo just won her third Grammy Award. So how does the world around her inform her music?
Through music, I learned the traditions of my family. I learn the greatness of my ancestors. Through storytelling and song, you know who you are.
That's all to come on this week's journey along the cultural...
That the state, rightly or wrongly, claims that what they were doing was not art. That was criminal action. What would the British or American government say...
And I write knowing that most of the published work I produce will be vetted, edited, disseminated, and reviewed by white people. I've accepted this as a precondition of doing something I love more than just about anything else, and I take heart in the fact that so many of my favorite writers, James Baldwin, Toni Morrison,
only perceive the same. Iceland and Kuwait could not be more different. And yet, what strikes me moments before touchdown is what both places seem to share. I chose to come to Iceland in the dead of winter because I wanted to throw myself into a context as diametrically opposed to my own as possible. Ice in sharp contrast to my region's fire. But that very first night, the acrid smell of sulfur in my shower reminded me that this country is also powered by a churning in the belly of the earth. Anyone who has been to Kuwait will instantly recognize the rotten egg smell of Iceland's hot water. Iceland's geothermal fire has been put to remarkable use, cleanly powering its energy needs. Kuwait's oil on fire is part of why our planet's temperature is rising, why my region of the world has been embroiled in war for decades. As a Kuwaiti with a homeland and a passport and relatively easy access to international visas, I'm aware of my privilege. I can safely cross borders migrants from neighboring countries are daily risking their lives to reach. I feel tremendous guilt about being able to fly to Reykjavik to escape, for a time, the pressure cooker existence of life in the Middle East. Knowing all the while that what feels like a pressure cooker to me in Kuwait is nothing compared to the pressure cookers exploding in Syria, Iraq, Gaza, Yemen. But guilt is cheap. Guilt displaces responsibility. So, if not guilt, then for a writer of fiction, what kind of response is ethically viable in the face of interminable violence and suffering just a stone's throw away? It's this that I came to Iceland to work out. I'm a slow writer. I mull each word, the silence between words, the rhythms produced in the exchange. The pace of my region over the course of the last year, however, has been fast. From barrel bombs and beheadings to drowned toddlers and murdered innocents, the velocity of the onslaught is eclipsed only by the intensity of its horror. Mass and social media can keep up with it. But literature, I think, is not as well equipped to trace the pace of the last few years in the Middle East. Literature takes time. Time to ponder perspectives, to consider the long view, to flesh out alternatives, to experiment and take risks, to drift. There is luxury involved in all of this, a luxury those on the move under the threat of death do not have. Perhaps it's a luxury those of us close to the fray also do not have. The luxury of slowness necessary to writing good literature seems to me to be under threat in my region. This last year has forced me to reconsider the relationship between speed, catastrophe, and writing. Being in Iceland has intensified this consideration by the contrast it provides. Iceland is the land of sagas. It has been described as the country with more writers, readers, and books per capita than anywhere else. Perhaps this enthusiasm for literature has something to do with a temperate pace of life linked to weather, light, geology, and an uninterrupted connection to the past. Time moves differently in Iceland, to the rhythm of glaciers, the shift of tectonic plates. The darkness of winter allows you to catch your breath, to calm the frenzied whirl of panicked thoughts, to consider how to order words on a page such that they might convey something urgent, but nonetheless beautiful. 25 years ago, over 650 of Kuwait's oil wells were set on fire by the retreating Iraqi army. The country was covered in a shroud of black off and on for a year. Here in Iceland, volcanoes periodically blacken skies with ash, sometimes killing a quarter of the population, as occurred in the eruption of Laki in 1783, other times disrupting air travel for a few weeks, as happened with the eruption of Eyjafjallajökull in 2010. Iceland's black skies are natural occurrences. Kuwait's black skies were man-made. The fallout from the volcanic eruption of 1783 in Iceland was devastating, but it has been linked to the French Revolution and to the development of democracy in Europe. The black skies over Kuwait in 1991 augured the beginning of 2.5 decades of regional instability, the decimation of lives, the snuffing out of potential. We're still waiting for the ash to dissipate. My visit to Iceland has thrown these differences into sharp relief. The contrast is disheartening. Then I recall my professor's insight, and it reminds me that fiction possesses the unique capacity to cultivate sameness with indifference by traversing difficult or unfamiliar terrain. Isn't this what we need urgently in my region and way beyond it? When we navigate disparate territories through language, via characters, locale, plot, and technique, we inhabit strange worlds and can connect them to our own. Suddenly, fire begins to feel a lot like ice, ice like fire. In this exchange between hot and cold, speed and slowness, sameness and difference, I begin to rediscover, for the millionth time, the great wonder of fiction.
May al-Naqib. The singer Angélique Kidjo from the West African country of Benin has been called the Queen of African Music. And last week, when she collected her third Grammy Music Award, this time for Best World Music Album, she had this to say about the continent of her birth.
Africa is on the rise. Africa is positive. Africa is joyful. Let's get together and be one through music and say no to hate and violence through music. Thank you.
As well as her hugely popular music, she's made 16 albums so far. She's also known for using her profile to raise awareness of issues like environmental conservation and women's rights in Africa. A few days before the Grammys, the producer Tanya Katenjian met Angélique at her home in New York to find out how her activism and art interact.
I learned very early in my life that words have consequences more than kicking somebody, because words hurt and stay. There is a proverb in my country that said, word is like an egg. Once it fell and break, you can piece it back. Sometimes I don't have the word to say things, and I sing them.
Ori mi majelo ye mi yato bi mi sae. Ori mi majelo ye mi baba to bi mi sae.
Through music, I learned the traditions of my family. I learned the greatness of my ancestors. Our history in Africa is oral. Through storytelling and song, you know who you are. So music, for me, is a medium that allowed me and helped me tell my story and the story of the people that can tell the stories. So that's my passion. That's what I wake up for. That's what I go to bed for. That's what I breathe for. You have the music, you write the music, and you are in sync with it, that truth, and that's it. And people will hear it. You don't have to do, you don't have to overdo it for people to feel your soul. That's why I say music is the mirror of the soul. Music has always been the thing that allowed me to keep my positivity. Because sometimes when you go to the field trying to help people, emotionally it drenched. Sometimes it's hell on earth, really. You are in a situation where you're like, we're really in the 21st century and this is happening and no one wants to talk about it. There's no money to fix this. What kind of human being are we? And people that, the very people that you go to help, they are the ones that help you find the solution. And when I come back, if I didn't have music, I don't think I could be, I'll be in a senile hospital or whatever it is. I'll be crazy, I'm telling you, because too much pain is unbearable sometimes. And from that point on, my music and my activism becomes one, because music helped me to rebuild myself, to be able to not dry my spirit in out or not dwelling in the pain, but always be positive, to move forward all the time, to challenge myself and to challenge a system that is in place, to make cracks, little cracks in the system, for people to have oxygen sometime, to be able to move on. So for me, music is the weapon of peace. You can have it both ways. You can have a very successful career and be outspoken. I prefer to speak up, because every second of silence kills somebody somewhere in the world. I just want to be remembered as a human being and a woman, a singer and an activist. That's all that matters. No one have the right to dehumanize me or take my identity away from me. I won't take it away from no one, so don't do the same to me. That's all. It is important, doesn't matter what the message is that we are putting out there, to entertain people first. As my uncle used to say to me, when I asked him at a very young age, what is a song? What is it made of? How can you be singing so many profound and painful words and people are dancing about on it? And he simply said, when you have the gift of arts, any kind of form of arts, your goal is to empower people, not to make them feel guilty. If you make them feel guilty, nothing moves, get worse. So even the songs that don't have strong message, sometimes some people need that to get off their bed and they get to work. Because not everybody's life is easy. Not. Some people are in hell every day. Some people's lives just turn to hell from one day to the other. You don't know why. So everything has to be taken proportionally and very carefully. So music that is there, if the artist that does the so-called music that is not thoughtful are making tons of money out of it, who am I to blame them? First, probably people buying it. Nobody put the gun on the head of anybody to buy that. So if you consume it, you have to be responsible.
Angelique Kidjo. That's all for this week. I would love to hear what you think of the stories we heard today. You can get in touch using hashtag TheCulturalFrontline or email me at theculturalfrontline@bbc.co.uk, and join me next week for another trip along the cultural front line.